Today is Thursday, June 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, as protests continue over the death of George Floyd, two Atlanta police officers have been indicted, one for murder in the death of another black man last Friday.
You and the United Nations are your brothers and sisters keepers in America, and you have the power to help us get justice for my brother George Floyd.
Also ahead, two musical legends in a musical battle on Juneteenth. It's all on today's International Edition. As the U.S. continues to grapple with a growing and sustained movement of outrage over the death of the police killing of George Floyd and systemic racism, prosecutors in Atlanta announced 11 charges, including felony murder against a white police officer who shot and killed Rayshard Brooks in the back last Friday outside of a Wendy's restaurant. During a dramatic news conference Wednesday, District Attorney Paul Howard revealed disturbing details caught on video that showed Officer Garrett Rolfe kick the wounded man as he lay on the ground. And he said evidence also shows the other officer on scene standing on Brooks as he lay there dying. That officer is also facing multiple charges. Joining us to discuss the significance of the charges coming just 5 days after the killing is criminal defense attorney Jack Rice. Jack, this seems unprecedented for police officers to be charged so quickly.
Well, it's a really big deal because we're starting to see a response that we probably wouldn't have seen before. Now, we have video in this case. That makes a difference here. But one of the issues we really have to look at is exactly what it is that this man did in response to the police and what the police did in response back. The problem that we have here is we have an autopsy that has two bullet holes from these police officers into the back of this man. Now, the question is, what was the threat? What's a reasonable use of force? And at this point, it appears that the prosecutor's office has decided that this was absolutely unreasonable and that essentially this was felony murder.
And do you think that what we're seeing with this new video of the police officer after he shot Mr. Brooks and Mr. Brooks was laying on the ground, that the officer apparently kicked him and the other officer apparently leaned on him? It's sort of unfathomable to understand.
Demeanor means something in a case like this. It wasn't just the fact that one of these officers kicked him. It's the fact that he didn't provide medical attention to him for more than 2 minutes, even though he knew that he was shot. If you look at the totality of circumstances, this is a big deal, and this really goes to the perceptions that this police officer seemed to have at the time, let alone the fact that he apparently had other complaints against him in the past. So this says a lot, but it also says a lot that they've decided to actually prosecute because previously they didn't do anything to this officer. And so the fact that they're doing something now, I think, says something about the shift that may be coming generally down in Atlanta, but also in the country as a whole.
Criminal defense attorney Jack Rice. A few hours after our interview, the second officer's attorney denied that he is testifying against his partner. U.S. lawmakers are rushing to address the demands for police reform seen in the historic nationwide protests over the May 25th death of George Floyd in police custody. Senate Republicans announced Wednesday they'll vote on a proposal next week as House Democrats plan to pass their own reform legislation. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports on the chances both sides have on reaching an agreement in a tough election year.
The debate in America's streets.
Police, the police.
Now headed to Capitol Hill as Senate Republicans introduce their own proposal for police reform.
Too often we're having a discussion in this nation about, are you supporting the law enforcement community? Or are you supporting communities of color? This is a false binary choice. The answer to the question of which side do you support, it's I support America. And if you support America, you support restoring the confidence that communities of color have in institutions of authority.
Republicans say their bill builds on President Trump's executive order Tuesday.
I'm getting a little tired of being lectured to by my Democratic colleagues that all this is Trump's fault. You had 8 years under President Obama.
But Democrats say the Republicans' proposal does not sufficiently address the no-knock warrants that resulted in the death of Breonna Taylor earlier this year, or the lethal chokeholds under scrutiny in the death of George Floyd.
Real change comes with accountability. As drafted, the Republican bill doesn't provide it. So we have a tale of two chambers, a glaring contrast between a strong, comprehensive Democratic bill in the House and a much narrower and much less effective Republican bill in the Senate.
The Democrats' proposal would end the legal doctrine of qualified immunity that protects police officers from being accused of misconduct.
A profession where you have the power to kill should be a profession that requires highly trained officers who are accountable to the public.
The White House says qualified immunity is one of many elements of the Democrats' proposal the president will never sign.
By removing qualified immunity, what you're essentially doing is not allowing police to do their job. There would be a decrease in policing in this country. Our streets would not be safe.
Trump does support Senate Republicans' bill, and the co-sponsor of that legislation is hopeful.
I don't think the nation is going to allow us to lose the momentum.
But Scott's bill would not pass the Democratic majority U.S. House without significant negotiations. And lawmakers are running out of time to pass ambitious legislation in an election year. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The UN Human Rights Council began 2 days of debate Wednesday over systemic racism and a potential independent investigation into the death of George Floyd. As Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, Floyd's brother also testified to the council via video.
The UN Human Rights Council meeting began with a moment of silence for all the victims of racial injustice. In opening Wednesday's debate, UN Deputy Secretary General Amina Mohammed said merely condemning expressions and acts of racism was not enough to alleviate generations of suffering resulting from racial injustice. Speaking by teleconference from New York, she said the debate was taking place as marches for racial justice and equality take place around the world.
The most recent trigger for these protests was the killing of George Floyd in an appalling act of police brutality. But the violence spans history and borders alike across the globe. Today, people are saying loudly and movingly, enough. The United Nations has a duty to respond to the anguish that has been felt by so many for so long.
In Geneva, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet deplored the death of George Floyd in what she called an act of gratuitous brutality. She said Floyd's death, while in police custody in the U.S. city of Minneapolis last month, has come to symbolize the systemic racism that harms millions of people of African descent.
He has brought to a head the outrage of people who feel they are neither adequately served nor adequately heard by their governments. It has brought to their feet millions of allies, people who are now beginning to acknowledge the reality of systemic discrimination suffered by others, and to join their demand that every person in their countries be treated with equality, fairness, and respect.
The brother of George Floyd gave an emotional address to the council by teleconference from his home in the U.S. city of Houston, Texas. Philonis Floyd described his family's anguish while watching the last moments of his brother's life.
You and the United Nations are your brothers and sisters' keepers in America, and you have the power to help us get justice for my brother George Floyd. I'm asking you to help him. I'm asking you to help me. I'm asking you to help us, black people in America.
In advance of the debate, U.S. Ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Andrew Bremberg, issued a statement affirming Washington's commitment to addressing racial discrimination and injustices stemming from that. In alluding to the death of George Floyd, he said U.S. President Donald Trump condemned the brutal actions of the police involved and was implementing police reforms. He cited the steps as an example of government transparency and responsiveness in holding violators accountable for their actions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. President Donald Trump's re-election campaign will be holding a large rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma this weekend. It's the biggest event in the country since coronavirus restrictions were imposed in March. The president, along with Vice President Mike Pence, have been trying to move past the pandemic, relaying positive messages indicating the threat is all but behind us. Pence recently said the possibility of a second wave has been overblown. But there is growing concern among health officials who are seeing a rise in cases in many U.S. states, including Oklahoma. Joining us now for a better understanding of where things are in the United States is Dr. Ravina Kular, infectious disease specialist and epidemiologist with the Infectious Disease Society of America. Thank you so much for being with us. So Americans seem to be getting some mixed messages. Where do things stand as far as this pandemic, particularly in the United States? Is this all behind us now? Is it over?
It is not on. We are getting worse than better. And I think Dr. Fauci said it the best, where he stated that we are still in this first wave. Everyone keeps talking about we're in a second wave. We aren't. We've seen over the past 2 weeks, at least 19 states have seen new COVID cases go up. And just this past week, 6 states reported the highest record high single day jumps of new cases. So what we're seeing here is that there's new cases that are popping up and things are getting worse. And the reason why is because a lot of states are reopening and a lot of people are thinking that the pandemic is over, and it is not.
It seems like Americans started to get intense cabin fever and are just dying to get out. Do you think that what we're, the rise that we're seeing is because things are opening, or is it just that it just hasn't stopped? Is this a continuation, but it's still the first wave?
I think it's still the first wave, and I think it's multifactorial. So I think it is still happening. It's the first wave. But I think that also the reopening has led to many people having a false sense of security, thinking that this pandemic is slowly getting better, which is not. And many people, they have started taking off their masks, not social distancing, gathering in large crowds, going to places that maybe it's too soon to reopen, such as those nail salons, gyms, movie theaters, those close proximity areas, there's still such a high risk of transmission. And I think that's what the concern is here, where you're seeing those cases go up. It's in those large crowded areas where there isn't that social distancing and there aren't people wearing those masks.
So you're saying it isn't getting any better. It's just moving.
I do not think it's just moving. We do not see things getting better. States are seeing increasing cases. There is no state currently that has seen any improvement in coronavirus cases.
So we're hearing we're past it and there may not even be a second wave. Will there be a second wave if we're still in the first one? How will we know it's a second wave?
I think we'll know if it's a second wave when we see the cases starting to plateau off and decline. And then that second wave will come about if it happens when things start reopening, every single state starts reopening, and a lot more people do not abide by the policies and cases drastically increase. But we might just go into a first wave and continue that first wave unless everyone abides to these policies.
How would you advise people right now to make decisions about what they do, given that they're getting a lot of mixed messages?
I think that the key thing that everyone needs to keep in mind is that we still are in a pandemic. We have over 2 million cases in the United States. We are at almost about 120,000 deaths. And what I recommend that every person does is still follow the strict guidance recommended by the CDC and the World Health Organization, recommending everyone to wear a mask, socially distance at least 6 feet away, and do not have the big gatherings where you're gathered in large crowds. That is the only way that we are going to actually tackle and fight against this pandemic as an entire U.S. nation.
What about the rest of the world? It's sort of confusing as to what's going on in other places like Europe, which some countries had it pretty bad and then it calmed down and they're starting to reopen, as well as other places around the world. They're worried about economies. But would you say the same for what you just said about the United States, that this is still a threat worldwide?
I would. I mean, in worldwide, we're about 500,000 deaths and over 8 million cases. And this is a global issue. And you have to think about viruses and bacteria as they don't care about borders, right? If we have flights which are still flying and someone is COVID positive, which ends up flying on a plane and is asymptomatic, came out a carrier, that's where that transmission comes into play. So until this pandemic is globally handled, we are going to have this situation not only in the U.S., but in other parts of the world. Viruses don't care about borders, and they do not need a passport. Some countries have done really well, like Vietnam, where they quarantined individuals, and then they had contact tracing put into place where they were able to track every single person that that person came into contact with, and then they were quarantined. In the U.S., we were just slowly doing that. And until we have contact tracing individuals in every single county to really implement that, we're still going to have this pandemic around.
Dr. Ravina Kular, infectious disease specialist and epidemiologist with the Infectious Disease Society of America. Scores of domestic flights in and out of Beijing were canceled Wednesday as officials ramped up efforts to contain a new coronavirus outbreak in the Chinese capital. Reuters reporter Gloria So has details.
Chinese officials recorded 31 new infections on Tuesday, bringing the total to 137 cases since last Thursday. It's the worst resurgence of the disease in the city since February, and authorities on Tuesday reacted by raising Beijing to a level 2 alert, reversing a downgrade to level 3 just 10 days earlier. Aviation data tracker VeriFlight showed about 60% of scheduled flights to and from Beijing Capital International Airport have been or will likely be canceled as of Wednesday afternoon. The city's roads and highways have still been open, and people have continued going to work. But movement in and out of the city has been strictly controlled, and residents in high-risk areas must be quarantined and tested. The new outbreak has been traced to the Xinfadi Wholesale Food Center, where thousands of tons of vegetables, fruit, and meat are traded every day.
Gloria Tso reporting for Reuters. The Johns Hopkins University COVID-19 tracker has counted more than 8 million confirmed cases worldwide. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in Hawaii meeting with China's top diplomat. The meeting comes as relations between the two top world powers have soured over a number of contentious issues, including China's handling of the coronavirus pandemic and its move to impose new security legislation on Hong Kong. No reporters have been allowed to attend. The discussions got underway Wednesday as explosive details emerged from a new book by President Donald Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton. According to an excerpt of the book published in the Wall Street Journal, Bolton alleges that Trump sought China's help in winning re-election in 2020. NATO defense ministers met on video Wednesday, discussing concerns over President Trump's announcement Monday of a major reduction in U.S. troops stationed in Germany, saying the U.S. NATO ally was delinquent for failing to pay enough for its own defense. Germany was not notified in advance. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, in a news conference after the first day of meetings, played reports of serious concerns.
We had a good discussion, and Secretary Esper stated very strongly that, of course, the U.S. stays committed to European security, and the United States will consult with other allies as we move forward.
Germany is a hub for U.S. operations in the Middle East and Africa. Joining us for details on the NATO meeting is Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. Catherine, you've been following this closely. What was the main takeaway?
The main point is that the United States remains committed to its European allies, and that there will be a consultation process with European allies, with NATO, if there are any future U.S. troop withdrawals from Europe. Now, you know, this really doesn't take anyone any further. NATO is like any other military organization. It likes to have clarity. So when you have, for example, on Monday, U.S. President Donald Trump saying that he's ordering this reduction in troop strength in Germany, that he's going to move out 9,500 members of U.S. forces there. And then by Wednesday, you have the defense secretary saying, well, we're not quite sure, no decision has yet been taken. This adds to the general confusion. And even though there was this big message that the U.S. is committed, still everyone is thinking, well, what's going to happen next after the U.S. has pulled out of so many different treaties? And, of course, there's a rumor going around that the U.S. may pull out of Afghanistan, could even announce a complete troop withdrawal from Afghanistan. It really doesn't take the alliance any further at a time when it really should be concentrating on other points, which is what the NATO secretary said. There are other issues such as the militarization of China and the new missile systems that the Russians are putting in place.
And it sounded like Mr. Stoltenberg really tried to drill down on the point that the U.S. presence in Europe isn't just about Europe, that it helps the U.S. and other places around the world, really.
Absolutely. And this has always been the big, if you like, the big plus as to why the U.S. is in Europe. It is not just helping fellow countrymen and making sure that democracy is in place. No, after the end of the Cold War, the Americans really did stay there. They are a partner. We've seen, particularly in Europe, these last couple of months, they've been taking part in helping countries with the COVID epidemic, for example, delivering goods, delivering medical equipment. We also see from France, this is another reason why France is very concerned about any U.S. drawdown, is that the U.S. Command for Africa is based in Stuttgart in Germany. There are concerns that if that is reduced in numbers somewhat, then France will lose a partner in its efforts to bring some sort of peace or stability to the Sahel region, because the French rely on intelligence and also any other logistical support that comes out of that base. We've also got the U.S. Navy, which is based in Italy as part of NATO. So it's really very integrated in NATO as part of Europe. And just at a time when there are other conflicts going on, NATO chief was sort of, if you like, trying to say, well, you know, you're part of us and we're all in this together and we're all dealing with other issues together. And let's keep it that way.
Paris-based reporter Catherine Field. U.S. President Donald Trump authorized sanctions against the ICC, International Criminal Court, last week for investigating possible war crimes by U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Fatou Pensouda, prosecutor for the International Criminal Court, spoke to VOA about how the court will move forward without fear or favor. VOA's Salem Solomon reports.
The prosecutor of the International Criminal Court is vowing to stand firm after U.S. President Donald Trump authorized sanctions against the court, which is probing suspected war crimes by U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Fatou Bensouda, originally from The Gambia, told VOA that she would not be swayed by U.S. actions from prosecuting international war crimes.
These attacks constitute an escalation and an unacceptable attempt to interfere with the rule of law and the court's judicial proceedings. An attack on the ICC also represents an attack against the interests of victims of atrocity crimes, for many of whom the ICC represents the last hope for justice.
Trump called the ICC's stance an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo noted that the U.S. is not party to the court and warned allies from NATO countries that they too could be targeted for their actions in Afghanistan. In March, when the ICC's investigation was first authorized, Pompeo slammed the court as being politically motivated.
This is a truly breathtaking action by an unaccountable political institution masquerading as a legal body. It is all the more reckless for this ruling to come just days after the United States signed a historic peace deal on Afghanistan, which is the best chance for peace in a generation. Indeed, the Afghan government itself pleaded with the ICC not to take this course. But the ICC politicians had other goals.
The sanctions could impose financial and travel restrictions on ICC employees and their families. Bensouda had her visa to travel to the U.S. revoked last year, but said she has been able to visit New York to brief the U.N. Security Council on her office's work.
The visa restrictions, the threats, and the other measures that are announced by the U.S., I see as naked attempts to interfere with the court's judicial and prosecutorial independence to meet political objectives. And we regret the aggressive positions that has the position that has been taken by the U.S. government, not least given the country's long-standing contribution to the field of international criminal justice, and we hope that it will be reconsidered.
Critics of the ICC say it is solely authorized to prosecute crimes when national courts are unable or unwilling to do so. U.S. military courts have tried service members and convicted soldiers for crimes committed in Afghanistan. Brent Schaefer, a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, says the U.S. has done a good job for holding its soldiers accountable. He told Fox News that the U.S. has complied with its obligations under domestic and international law, including the Convention Against Torture. Bensouda said that the court is accustomed to anger from countries being investigated.
Because of the nature of our work, because we are challenging the status quo, because we will exercise our jurisdiction without fear or favor, we will expect this pushback. It is not going to be the last time that this is happening to the court.
In recent years, a number of African heads of state have criticized the court for disproportionately targeting Africans and called for African countries to withdraw from the ICC. Salim Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
Here are some of the other stories we're following at VOA. A fund worth more than $12 million has been established by the Black Lives Matter Global Network Foundation. The organization says the money will be used to fight institutional racism, and it's setting aside $6 million in donations to support Black-led grassroots groups. South Korea's President Moon Jae-in faces the biggest crisis yet in his bid to foster reconciliation with North Korea, after the North lashed out with destruction of a joint office and rolled back agreements. Tensions between the two Koreas have plunged to their lowest level since Moon took office in 2017. He vowed to work to end decades-old confrontation and be a mediator in pushing North Korea to give up its nuclear and missile programs. And finally today, singer-songwriter John Legend releases his new album, Bigger Love, on Friday. On the same day, he'll be battling singer Alicia Keys in the latest verses on Instagram Live. But Legend says Keys is really like a sister to him, and it won't be a real battle, rather a celebration of Black music, of Juneteenth, and their mutual love and respect for one another. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Mungani, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and be well.
I don't want to think about nothing. The world feels like it's crumbling. Every day another new something. But in the end, I just wanna think about loving.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this, whatever?
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Whoa. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London. Twitter at Border Crossings or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.